The views and opinions expressed by the hosts on MadisonTalks.com are those of the host. That's why we do it. Give us a call, 608-210-1667. Thanks for listening.
Longtime medicine banker Bob Schlick talked about his new book on the importance of mentors in life. Bob grew up in a Madison golfing family and was president of four well-known Madison area banks. In this book, he shares what he learned from family mentors, coaches, teachers, banking mentors, psychologists, and business mentors. Now Bob talks about these mentors, how they help shape, influence, and brighten his life with longtime Madison newspaper columnist and author Doug Moe.
Oh, well, bless my soul, but what's wrong with me?
Hello. Thanks for being with us today. I am Doug Moe. As Mitch said in the intro, former newspaper columnist and now magazine writer and book author as well, but really delighted to be here with the important guest, Bob Schlicht, and his new book, The Importance of Mentors in Life. Bob, the one thing that to me made the book as good as it is was it's not just your life story. There's a lot on business and banking, and then certainly what I want to talk about right now as well, which is golf. And it's not superficial. You really did some research on this, and I guess to start with the golf part of it, can you talk a little about, what did your research encompass? Were you able to find books, or how did you dig out some of this material?
Well, I found a couple books that my dad had that had all the Open champions and the tournament records from when the United States Open first started. So it went from the 1890s all the way to 1960, and then I had one from 1961 on up to I think when Andy North won his last U.S. Open. So it was kind of interesting to find that data in just a couple books that my dad had kept over the years.
He was, if I'm remembering right, the first Wisconsin professional to ever play in a U.S. Open?
Is that actually, the first Madison professional.
Madison professional.
Okay, yep. And he played in his first one, qualified, and played in it in 1931, and then he played 1931, 32, 33, and 35.
And his best... His name was Cully.
Carl. Yes, Carl with a K, and right. Cully with a K. That right. was his nickname, and Carl Cully Schlicht, and...
He got started caddying.
Yeah, he did. He started in 1914. That's a few years before I was born. And he started at 9 years old. His father was in the construction business, and they lived on the east side, I think the 2500 block of East Johnson Street. So he walked over to Maple Bluff at nine and said he wanted to earn a little money and caddied. And the people that he caddied for were some really good golfers, and he said that that's where he really learned how to play the game. And then he had an early mentor, Guy Martin, who was a pro at Maple Bluff Country Club, who was the pro for a number of years. But in 1921, he asked my dad to be the assistant pro at the club. And he was a very important mentor in my dad's life, Guy Martin. And Guy, in 1923, finished fourth in the Wisconsin State Open. So my dad was pretty fortunate to have him as a mentor early on.
And eventually he goes across town to Blackhawk, your dad.
Yes. In 1924, he was offered the assistant pro there. And the pro at the time was a man by the name of John C. Hackbarth. And his brother... Otto played in many U.S. Opens, but John Hackbarth, as my dad was pretty fortunate to have him as his second real important mentor, because in 1925, he won runner-up in the Wisconsin State Open Championship. So he was a good player in his own right, but a very good teacher as well, John Hackbarth. So, and my dad was there for a couple years as the assistant pro.
And then... Became
the pro at Monona Golf Course.
That's right. Yeah,
and he was over there for 3 years, and that's when he had a chance to play in a pretty famous tournament in the state of Wisconsin. I think he finished in 1928 16th in the state open, and then in 1930 he finished third in the state open.
So even though his legacy, I think, in a lot of our minds is that he was a great club professional and really kind of set a standard over almost 50 years of how you do that job, he was really a good player too. Very good player.
Yes. You know, he, and I think I have a website, bobschlick.com, and I have a nephew that's very gifted with computers, so he and technology, and he put a picture of my dad swinging a golf club in 1930, and I thought it was really cool because I knew he had a very good swing, but I didn't realize it was as good as I remembered.
Didn't he play an exhibition, Bob, with Gene Sarazen?
Yes.
And Babe Dickerson.
Yes, he played in with Gene Sarazen a number of times, and Walter Hagen was a dear friend of his, and he played with Walter Hagen a number of times. But in 1928, he played an exhibition with Doug Brook, who was a pro at Nakoma Country Club at the time, and my dad was pro at Monona. And then they ended up beating the reigning U.S. Open champion, Johnny Farrell, and Gene Sarazen in a match at Nakoma Country Club. One up, and it was the best ball match between the reigning and former United States Open champion, Gene Sarazen, and Johnny Farrell, the reigning, as I mentioned. So that was a neat event to discover, and I never knew about it. I had to go to the archives at the State Historical Society to dig it up. I just Googled his name, and it came up, and I thought, wow, that's quite interesting.
You know, in that era, there wasn't a great deal of money in professional golf for touring professionals. There wasn't even a tour to speak of, really. So
yes,
these guys did go and play matches. Madison's had some other famous ones, you know, right? Arnold, your brother actually caddied for in the match with Palmer Nicklaus or something
yes,
like that.
Yes, yes, yes. That would have been in 1961. Arnold Palmer and Gary Player came to Madison, and there was a junior tournament.
I mean, can you imagine Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson coming and playing O'Dana Hills,
yeah,
right?
I know
what this was.
Yes. And it was 1961, as I mentioned, and they played at O'Dana Hills golf course, and I was just a little kid, but I was watching, and my brother played in a junior tournament. The West Side Optimist put it on, and he played in a junior tournament to see who would get the caddy for the two, and it was a three-way tie. Phil Johnson, who was a Madison West golfer, my brother Butch, a Madison West golfer, and David Penn tied with 74s. Then there was a playoff, and poor David Penn lost in a playoff. But the following year, when Jack Nicklaus came to town, he caddied for Jack Nicklaus. So
that's a nice consolation. Yeah.
That was a good consolation prize for Dave Penn, who was an outstanding golfer. He played at Madison West, of course, in the University of Wisconsin, where he was the captain of the golf team, and was mentored by my dad.
You know, those stories still live in legend. I got an email literally over the weekend from somebody asking me a question about Arnold Palmer's rock, which on the 16th hole at O'Dana, that uphill par 4, coming back towards O'Dana Road, tough hole. For years and years, there was a big rock off to the left of the fairway, and the legend was Palmer drove it past that or to that rock.
And, yes. Both Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus hit the ball a long ways. And I think over the years, I think Jack actually hit it a little further than Arnold Palmer. But that day at the tournament, when Palmer and Player played at O'Dana Hills Golf Course in Madison, it was called the West Side Park, and then they changed the name a few years later.
Yeah.
But I believe on the final score, Arnold Palmer had a 65.
Right. That was a new course record, I think, at the time.
Yes. And Gary Player didn't quite play as well. He had a 68, which was still pretty amazing in those days because they had metal shafts, but not metal woods back in those days. They were persimmon wood, most of the players used at that time.
I'm talking with Bob Schlicht about his new book, The Importance of Mentors in Life, and part of this book is a great dose of Madison and Wisconsin golf history. Coincidental, really, to the fact your dad was a club pro is the fact that this city has an amazing golf history and professional, and that's, you include that and you take a look at we've had four successful touring professionals, very successful.
Yes.
Come out of Madison.
You know, one of the early ones was Jimmy Millward, who my dad mentored at, and he played in 9 U.S. Opens.
And you've got an appendix profile of Millward and his
accomplishments. Yes, and Jerry Kelly and Steve Stricker were so prolific in their golf, I had to put them in an appendix because there was so much information. But they were, and really, Andy North deserves a lot of credit for what he did. He won 2 U.S. Opens and had a stellar high school career in golf and also at the University of Florida, where he's in their state Hall of Fame and the University of Florida's Hall of Fame and Wisconsin's Golf Hall of Fame and the Wisconsin Golf Hall of Fame. So,
and never moved away from Madison.
No,
he went to school down in Florida, as you say. But
yes, he was very loyal, and he's been a big supporter and a very generous person, as has all of the recent pros that have had tremendous success on the PGA Tour. They're just very generous people.
Yeah.
And it's interesting with Andy. He was an outstanding high school basketball player at Monona Grove High School, and he was a year ahead of me in high school. And we didn't play Monona Grove. We were in the Big 8 Conference where I played basketball. But he
from Madison Central.
From Madison Central, yes. And but he was offered Division I scholarships in basketball and golf. That's how good he was in basketball. And I think he made the right decision.
Yeah.
But
explains a little bit his great, as most people now know, what a dedicated fan he is of UW, Badger basketball.
Yes, and he did a little coaching for Dave McLean when Dave McLean was the head coach at the University of Wisconsin in football.
Oh, okay.
And he also has been a real loyal supporter of Badger athletics all the way around.
Yeah, I think he and Sue actually purchased a new floor at the Kohl Center. Some years back, so yeah.
Well, my dad always told me that behind every great man is a better woman, and I think Andy has just an amazing wife in Sue. She's been a great mom and loyal to the family and loyal to Andy, and they've got just a magnificent marriage.
Before we moved on to some of the newer pros, you mentioned, and then we kind of got off it early, Jimmy Millward, and he had a brother who was a great, and these folks were taught by your dad.
Yes, yes. Both Jimmy and Billy Millward and their sister, who married Joe Holt, Helen Millward Holt, was an outstanding golfer, and Dad was over at Nacoma Country Club from 1933 to 1940. And those were all his mentors, people that he helped. And I believe Steve Scaravella was one. I don't have any written knowledge, but I believe Steve was a member there, either at one of the in the 30s as a junior member. And I think he graduated from high school. But Steve Scaravella was probably one of the best amateurs ever to play golf in the state of Wisconsin.
And you write about Steve in the book. You mentioned his swing, which was such a natural,
unbelievable.
He won the city men's 9 times.
Yeah, that's
that's the record.
Yes, I just remember so vividly in 1965, my brother Butch got to the finals and he played Steve Caravello. And to give you
state
amateur.
Yeah.
And to give you an idea how much my dad thought of Steve Caravello. I asked my dad before the tournament, and I was just 14 years old, and I said, "Dad, who are you pulling for now in the finals of that tournament?" And I thought he'd say, "You know, your brother Butch," but he didn't. He said, "Well, they're both very good players, and I hope whoever has a very good round wins that tournament." That's how much he thought of Steve Caravella.
That's pretty cool. I got a really fun Steve Caravella story to share. But I think we may have to wait till after the break here. We've got a little bit left. Tim Sweeney, Madison attorney, caddied for Steve at Nacoma and shared this story with me, so maybe I can tell that after the break. Happy to be here with Bob Schlicht and his new book, The Importance of Mentors in Life. And as you can tell, there's a lot besides just business and banking in here. There's Bob's story and a lot about sports and my favorite sport, golf. So we'll be right back. Gotta get down to it.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com. Looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
Welcome back. Doug Moe here, along with my friend Bob Schlicht, who's written a very interesting new book called The Importance of Mentors in Life. And as we were going to the break, Bob, I just really quick share one of my Steve Caravello stories that our mutual friend Tim Sweeney had told me about caddying for Steve at Nakoma. It wasn't a tournament or anything. It was just a round. They were out on that fifth or sixth hole, pretty far away from the clubhouse, and Caravello was getting ready to putt. And there was a crow up in a tree making a racket. And Steve kind of gave it that baleful stare, but the crow kept going. And so Caravello walks over to where Tim Sweeney's holding the bag off to the side of the green, unzips a pocket, takes out a gun, and shoots the crow. And later I heard, I think they gave him a complimentary membership, Caravello, at Maple Bluff with the caveat that he not come armed to the course.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about Tim Sweeney. I know Tim very well, and he's a friend, and has helped me as a lawyer. But all-city, first-team football, basketball, baseball. And I think he must have been watching Steve Caravello because he's an outstanding golfer.
He's still good shooting player.
In his 70s. And I think Tim Sweeney now, he must be at least 57, 58, because Tim will correct me if I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, I think he's older because he's older than me.
I actually know exactly how old he is.
Last Caravello for me was he was the father-in-law of Bob Royko.
Oh yes,
who
married Jerry?
Married Steve's daughter Jerry, and when Bob's brother Mike Royko, the celebrated columnist down in Chicago, syndicated in 600 papers, greatest newspaper columnist of all time, in my opinion, when he died, Bob and I got together, Bob Royko, and I was able to do a book about Mike. So. In turn, my son, who was an aspiring junior golfer, got to meet Steve Caravello, which was a lot of connections in Madison.
Yeah. The Caravellos are just—they were wonderful people, and still are in this community.
Bob met Jerry. She was waitressing at Namio's, the old Park Street.
Oh yeah, Joe Namio. I went to school with two of his daughters.
Did you know he was at the Village Bar before he went over to Namio's on Park Street?
I did not know that. Wow.
Yeah, they're publishing a little booklet on the history of the Village Bar coming out, the one by Glenway Golf Course.
Oh, yes.
And Namio was an owner there earlier, yep. After Andy North, who we talked about, comes a couple of really terrific touring pros from Madison area anyway, Steve Stricker and Jerry Kelly, and you've got quite a bit of stuff in the book about them. It's interesting. You say Kelly may be the most accomplished, I think probably in duration and this sort of thing. Steve maybe racked up more wins, certainly.
Yes, but, yes. Yeah. Both two amazing golfers. I say in the book that certainly if I was in a two-man best ball, I'd if either one of them wanted to play with me.
Pretty good partner.
Either one of them would be pretty good. But, you know, Jerry Kelly was grew up in a golfing family, and his dad was a very good athlete, Jack. Yeah. And his mom, Lee, took up golf about when Jerry was born. And so he was fortunate because mom was a very good golfer, too. And Jerry was an all-city hockey player at Madison East High School.
And played Maple Bluff, I think. Kelly's were members there.
Yes, yeah. They were members at Maple Bluff, and Jack had gone to West High School, Jerry's dad. But Jerry was a competitive young man. I mean, to play hockey, he did some boxing, he played soccer, and obviously played golf. But I think he could have played Division I hockey or golf and decided to go out to the University of Hartford.
Yeah.
Well, the family was in the insurance business, and that school, you know, that's a big insurance town Hartford. And he decided to play Division I golf. And while he was playing, he was in a long driving contest and was third in the NCAA in the long driving contest, which I thought was really impressive because Jerry is a solid, strong young man. But, you know, you think of the long drivers and you think of, right, you know, somebody that's 230 pounds. Right. And certainly he was in good shape. But he was involved in a lot of things in high school and growing up, and he was very competitive. And when I talked with Jerry, he said, yeah, I can't wait to beat my dad in golf. You know, and he was just a little guy and competed across the country when I think he was 12 or 13 years old, if my memory serves me correct. So, and he's a modest man, and so is Steve Stricker, which I really appreciate both those men because they are not one to talk about themselves. They're more concerned about other people. But Jerry had an outstanding career, and he was, in 1996, he was the leading money winner on the Nike Tour. And by 2002, he was the fourth leading money winner on the PGA Tour.
And I think, Bob, I believe he missed getting his PGA card twice in a row, 2 years in a row, by like one shot at the Q School. And it would have been pretty easy to sort of hang your head, know, and let that get you, really screw you up, frankly. But he stuck with it, and as you say, ended up doing great on the big tour.
Yes, so. And he was, you know, as I mentioned, golf, hockey, baseball, soccer. He got involved in ping pong, darts, billiards. and as I said, he did some boxing. So he was very competitive, and he had his mind, I'm going to win, and that's the type of mind you need to be an Andy Norris, Steve Stricker, or Jack Nicklaus, or Arnold Palmer.
You know, all those guys you just mentioned, it's interesting to me. You think about golf, and you would think that these days to have a chance, you almost have to be born in the South or Southern California or something like that where you can play year-round. But all these guys, you know, especially Stricker and Kelly in North Wisconsin, the golf season isn't that long, but there must be something about maybe that's other the competitiveness they pick up playing these other sports.
Oh yeah,
I don't know.
You know, and Steve Stricker was an outstanding basketball player in high school, and I think a lot of people didn't know that. But so you look at the athleticism that some of these golfers have today. Right. I think of the man that won the U.S. Open last year. He's got to be 6'4".
Dustin Johnson.
Dustin Johnson
won yesterday.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I saw him at the PGA tournament, and he looked like a weightlifter to me. I mean, just chiseled. Muscles coming out of muscles. Tall.
Little different than golfers in the past. Some
yes,
of them.
Yes. Yeah. But, you know, but when you see the golfers, you know, Jack Nicklaus was an outstanding high school basketball player. Mm-hmm. And some of these people could do all sports. Tom Watson was a good football quarterback.
Yeah, from Kansas City.
Yep.
Again, not the South.
Right. Really, yeah. Football, basketball player, outstanding. And Andy North, you know, an outstanding athlete in anything he does. So they've got this good hand-eye coordination, which is very important for golf. So it's been interesting to see that. But Jerry, in 2002, he finished, as I said, fourth on the PGA Tour, but he was winning tournaments, two big tournaments that year, and I won't, it's in the book, I won't go into the specifics of the tournament, but the Western Open.
Right, I remember that.
And so that was one big, big tournament that he won early in his career. But I think if someone to win the Nike Tour Player of the Year in 1996, and then a short time later, 6 years later, he's fourth on the PGA Tour list. I mean, to me, amazing. And if we talk about Steve Stricker, he's done things that are just almost incomprehensible for the average person to follow. And I have all the tournaments that he won, and I think he won 12 tournaments during the course of his. And he's not done.
I mean,
and I can tell you, if Steve or Jerry ever listen to this, if you need someone to caddy for you, I'm happy to on the senior tour, because I think they're both going to be superstars the senior tour.
Jerry debuted on the senior tour and in a tournament a few weeks ago, and I think he did pretty well, yeah. And I think Steve just turned 50 within the last couple of weeks, so he's eligible now. And, of course, they've got the tournament in June here at University Ridge, the American Family.
Oh, yeah.
They'll both be playing in, and that's the post-50 circuit. So
yeah, that's
going to... I bet you one of those guys may well win that.
Yes.
Out at U Ridge.
And a good friend of mine invited me to play in the tournament this year in the Pro-Am.
Sure.
But,
are you going to do it?
I don't know if somebody will, you know, I don't know if Andy's going to play in it, but heck, I could probably caddy for Andy if he's interested. But he's been a longtime friend. But, you know, what Steve and Jerry Kelly have done to golf in Wisconsin, I mean, they've just taken it to the next level. It's just amazing.
Yeah, and I'd also mention, as I know you do in the book, Bob, Sherry Steinhauer. Sherry shared a story with me for a newspaper column a few years ago about being at a tournament, I think, out in New York, and she was so impressed with the kids that were bringing her the balls on the range, the buckets of range balls, how polite they were, how they shook her hand and looked her in the eye. And she asked the tournament director, what's with this? You know, these teenagers, they aren't usually like that. And the guy said, oh, they're with the First Tee, which is a program, national program, to help young people learn golf skills and life skills. Well, Sherry was so impressed with that, she came back here and got very involved with the First Tee of Southern Wisconsin, and then recruited Andy, Steve, and Jerry, and now the four of them are just doing great, going great guns for the First Tee.
Well, I can tell you, I was fortunate to get to know the Steinhauer family, and I found out that my great-grandfather, Michael, was good friends with grandmother Steinhauer, and she wrote a book.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And found out that...
Olive Brunn Steinhauer.
Yes, and I did get to meet her, and she was a sweetheart. The whole family is just wonderful, and... But Fritz and his wonderful wife, who passed away a few years back, were kind of great, great people. And Fritz had the Madison Dairy Produce, and his sons, three of his sons, worked for him. And then his fourth son, actually, Tom, is a doctor, an eye doctor. So he's got his Steinhauer, an optometrist.
Sure.
And... just really a wonderful family. And Sherry, I got to meet her when she had, for the first time, when she had the tournament at Nakoma. It was a Sherry Steinhauer tournament. And there isn't a nicer family than I've come across. They're just really good people. And they're all talented golfers. So Fritz was on our board at the Valley Bank, Bank of Middleton, and M&I Bank. And then Chuck Steinhauer took over. That was his oldest son, a good pitcher at Memorial High School, Chuck. I had some friends that played against him, and they said, yeah, I got struck out a few times by Chuck Steinhauer. And then Gary is an outstanding golfer and won the City of Madison tournament in golf and is still playing really good golf. And then the other brothers were involved in the business, so they had three of the boys involved in the business, and then Sherry decided to play a little golf.
Which... Yeah, Madison Memorial, and then went on and won, I think, at least two major championships,
mm-hmm.
Both British Opens. But that's pretty amazing. And again, I'm intrigued by the fact that it's whether it is that they don't burn out because they're not playing golf as teenagers 12 months a year, Bob, if that might not be part of it, you know.
It could well be.
And in any case, we're glad to have Bob Schlicht here talking about golf and the importance of mentors in life. And we'll be back in just a minute.
Prisoner who has long paid for his crime, but is there because he's a victim of the time. I wear the black for those who've never read.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com. Looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
Welcome back. Doug Moe here with Bob Schlicht and his new book, The Importance of Mentors in Life. I want to just finish quick with, we were talking about Sherry Steinhauer before the break, and I had a chance to spend some time last summer talking with Sherry after her great mentor, Manuel Della Torre, passed away. Manuel was the longtime head pro at Milwaukee Country Club and a legendary figure in golf teaching circles. And after Sherry was a member at Nakoma, and Alan Mitchell over there had taught her, and Alan said at some point, very graciously, Sherry, I've taken you as far as I can take you. You know, if you want to go to the next level, you got to go see Manuel Della Torre. So she did, and the rest is history. We were also talking about Steve and Steve Stricker and Jerry Kelly.
Well, I just want to mention Jerry Kelly. In 2002, he won the Sony Open in Hawaii with a 14-under 266 for the 72-hole I'm trying to think of the exact year. The same year, in 2002, he won the Advil Western Open, as I mentioned earlier, with a 269 score or 19 under par. And then 2009, Jerry won the Zurich Classic Golf Tournament in New Orleans with a 14 under score of 274. And by 2012, Jerry Kelly was the 25th highest earning PGA Tour player in the history of the PGA Golf, which I thought was pretty impressive.
Well, he's endured, and the same with Steve. You know, to keep your card and keep, because there's a lot of good young players coming up every year.
Oh yes,
but they managed to somehow stay competitive and hang in there. And yeah, Kelly to me is like the ultimate kind of journeyman pro that scored a couple of wins, and what a career.
Yeah, he just has been amazing in that regard. And he's played in all the majors many times, and mm-hmm. Including the Open Championship in Europe. And he's played in the PGA. He's played in all the major tournaments. But the thing that's really amazing, in my humble opinion, is the job that he's done recently finishing runner-up in the Travelers Championship at the TPC River Highlands Course in Cromwell, Connecticut, with a 1,300 par 267. And that was recently.
Yeah, so he's like 48 or 9 at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you mentioned too, Bob, and the same obviously holds for Andy and Sherry, but not to overstate it, but just good folks too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I've got a real quick one about Jerry. When my son was 10 years old, we used to go out to Hawks Landing and chip and putt. And one night it was getting dark, and we're still there. And who comes from the back end of the range where he'd been kind of hitting balls away from the real driving range, but comes around in a cart, and it's Jerry Kelly. And he sees us, and my son Quinn, of course. Uh-huh. Jerry had just played with Tiger Woods in the last group on Sunday, the tournament before. He stops, he comes over. I don't even know him, you know, at the time, but he saw this kid. And he smiles, and he's got his putter, and he says to my son, Quinn, let's see what you got. And they have a four-hole putting tournament at Hawks Landing.
Oh, isn't that great?
You know, as the sun sets.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it just speaks to what, you know, I just thought it was really cool and nice.
Well, I know Quinn could beat me easy, but I'm wondering, how did he do?
He tied with Jerry. They two-putted every four holes.
Oh, my goodness. That's incredible. But Steve Stricker, you know, comeback player of the year twice in the PGA
amazing.
Tour.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff. And, you know, when you look at what he won in his career, it's the Motorola Western Open, the Kemper Open, the World Golf Championship, Accenture Match Play Championship in 2001. To me, these other tournaments were 1996, but 2001, to win that tournament across the world, the best players in the world, I thought, I just, right at that point, I thought to myself, he's already a superstar. And then he just keeps going on, you know, winning the John Deere Classic, not once, not twice, but three times. Amazing.
Bob, what do you think your dad would think about kind of the state of the game now? Do you think he'd be happy with both on the professional and the club level?
I think he would be. You know, what I always appreciated about my dad, he always said that, you know, golf is going to change over time. And he said, you know, he said to me one day, he said, you know, I don't use wooden shafted clubs anymore, which he used when he was playing in the Opens, when he played in those in the National PGA. And he said, it's going to be good for golf. And he thought golf is to have fun. And mm-hmm. I remember asking him once, I said, what's the best way to lower your score? Practice more? He said, well, no, you don't count all the strokes. And of course, then he started laughing. But I played with a few guys like that. You know, that
didn't he play with, I think there's a story in the book about your dad playing with Vince Lombardi.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Well, it was really interesting. I never knew it. You know, Dad was a modest guy, and he never really talked about his past golfing expertise. I had to dig into it. But I was playing golf with freshman football coach Vern Van Dyke over mm-hmm. at... I think it was the UW Ridge golf course. And he told me, he said, you know, your dad played with Vince Lombardi. And I said, oh, he did? I didn't know that. He said, yeah, it was 1963. And the University of Wisconsin, and Coach Van Dyke was on one of the coaches at for Milt Bruin. And Milt
sure.
Bruin was a head coach in those days. And he said, yeah, we invited... Coach Lombardi and his staff to play at Blackhawk, where my dad was a pro. And he said, I set up the pairings, and I put Vince Lombardi and your dad in the last group. Well, Vince Lombardi got really upset, and he wanted to know who put the pairings together. And Coach Bruin said, well, the guy at the end of the table here put them together. He said, what's his name? And he said, well, that's Vern Van Dyke, and he's a very good coach. He said, well, I want to talk to him right now. And he went over there, and of course, Coach Lombardi, if anybody watched the old clips, you know that he had quite a temper.
He could express himself. Yes.
So he said to Coach Van Dyke, what the heck are you doing? And he might not have used heck. What the heck are you doing putting me in the last group? I always play in the first group. And he said, well, Cully Schlicht is a well-known pro in Wisconsin, and I wanted to put you in that last group because I didn't want you to be pushed from behind. And he looks at Coach Van Dyke. He said, Good idea, young man.
There's a name in the book that golf fans in Wisconsin may know. I didn't realize he was from Madison. I'm talking about Eddie Teresa.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, you found...
Yes.
Because he went down, I think, and he's a pro or in Milwaukee.
Yes, but, yes.
But hails from Madison.
Hails from Madison, grew up in Madison. I believe he went to East High School.
Okay.
I hope I'm correct there. I did try to talk to him about it, but I was not able to get through to him because, when you call a golf pro in the winter, I know where they are.
They're right.
They're in the South. But I've got some interesting history, but... He actually surpassed Bobby Brew, a legendary pro in Wisconsin, for winning all the tournaments, all the major tournaments, and the most. And his brother Bill was also a golf pro.
Okay.
And Bill kind of obviously mentored his younger brother, but Eddie Teresa was...
He stayed active.
Yes, Teresa. Yes.
Yeah, I still see his name on the... maybe their senior... like club Wisconsin's senior open now, but his name still shows up in that little tiny type when you're looking at the,
yes,
yeah.
In 2003, Ed was inducted into the Wisconsin Golf Hall of Fame as
sure.
a relatively young man, but he was born and raised in Madison, and he spent most of his life around the game of golf. And as I said earlier, his brother really introduced him to golf. And his brother's a PGA professional and a highly respected golf instructor. I believe he's still working. But Eddie earned All-American honors at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas. And he earned a bachelor's degree in marketing. And after college, he returned to Wisconsin and entered the PGA Apprentice Program, which you could do at that point, and became a head pro at Oconomowoc Golf Course when he was only 27 years old. But Eddie became the all-time winningest golf professional in Wisconsin history with 19 major championships.
You were right, yeah.
Surpassing the legendary Bobby Brew.
Yeah.
So now he's played in some national terms. I think he played in the PGA, so he's done that. But I thought, for someone that stayed in Wisconsin and didn't go out on a regular basis like the three people we were talking to earlier, he had a very distinguished career.
Very much so.
And the other person I'd like to just mention quickly was Harry Simonson.
Right?
I mean...
Because we mentioned Caravello,
yeah.
And his great friend was Harry Simonson.
Oh, yes, and they were competitors. I got to play with Harry's son, and his son was an outstanding golfer.
Jeff, right?
Jeff Simonson.
Yeah.
And beat me in the city tournament 1 year. By I think two or three shots, so he could play.
Yeah.
But his dad, Harry, I think had one of the best golf swings, smooth. But more importantly, he had a short game to die for. I remember watching him many times because I'd walk around and watch these legendary players, Caravello and Simonson. And I tell you, if Harry Simonson hit a bad shot, which he didn't hit many of them, he could get up and down better than anybody I'd ever seen in my life. And I was around a lot of good players in my life, but he was something else. And it's so ironic that they went into the Golf Hall of Fame in successive years, Steve Caravello and Harry Simonson.
Well earned in both cases. I want to shift gears, Bob, if it's okay, because you mentioned Milt Bruun. And I was at an event last week where they kicked off the history of the 100 years of Camp Randall Stadium.
Yes.
This year is the 100th anniversary, and they're going to name like the 100 individuals who had the greatest impact. Now, I don't know that you'll be on that list.
No, no.
But I know.
I don't think so. I'm sure I won't, in fact.
But share a little. I mean, you do have a history there. You played for Coach Jardine.
Yes.
Talk about your time as a ball player there.
Well, it was kind of interesting. I went to Madison Central High School, and I graduated in 1969, and I played football, basketball. I ran track, and I played on the golf team. But senior year, I was doing pretty well the first 8 games, and then in the 9th game, I tore my cartilage in my knee. And Coach Van Dyke had recruited me to play at Wisconsin. He was a freshman coach, and John Cota was a coach. And sure. and I think a very good coach. He just didn't win enough games fast enough, which big time football even in those days.
It was a tough time on campus, period.
Oh, yeah.
You know, very late very, 60s, yeah.
Very tough time. But he went to Mankato State and had a very nice career there.
Yeah.
So I talk about him, and he was an amazing quarterback. I think in 1951, of my year I was born, he was the all Big Ten quarterback, mm-hmm. and set quite a few passing records for Wisconsin. So yeah. He was
nice guy. I knew his son Jeff.
Yes, I got to meet Jeff too. Nice, yeah. Very nice guy, but yeah. Good guy. But Coach Jardine came in. He was originally from Chicago and Fenwick High School. He was a coach there, and it was a Catholic school, and they won the Chicago City Championship. So he had a very distinguished career in coaching and in the high school level, and then he went to Purdue where he played football. He was a starting guard for Purdue University, John Jardine, for 2 years. And I really got to like him a lot. And most of the players really liked Coach Jardine.
Straight shooter.
Yep, straight shooter, charismatic man. His son is an attorney in town now.
Yeah.
And but just a good coach for the time. And his best record was 7-4. But when he came in, our first year, I think we were 5-6-1, my sophomore year. And we beat sophomore year Penn State, and they had Franco Harris and Jack Ham and Huffnagel and Levi Mitchell. We're all three of the four, I think, were Hall of Fame. One was in the Hall of Fame College, the other one Hall of Fame in the NFL. And we beat them pretty handily. And, of course, I was a special teams guy. And I'll tell you what, the Penn State guys, they had some big linebackers that like to hit, I'll tell you that. About a week after the game, I could feel my head still sore.
The and who hires Jardine is Elroy, I think, right?
Yeah, Elroy Hurst,
I mean,
yes.
You were really there at the time where some legends were.
Yeah, and it was really interesting when Elroy came in. I remember a couple of
as
guys.
As athletic director.
I think it was Larry Myalik, who was an outstanding end. He said it was kind of cool for them because Elroy was out catching passes, you know, because he had just...
well, there weren't many better.
No,
right?
No. That. Hall of Fame.
Right.
And my daughter, Britta, dated Elroy Hurst's grandson, and he was just a nice young man, and they're still friends, but he was a very good lacrosse player at Middleton High School.
Okay.
And I think he was smart not to get into the football, because the football got a little more... dangerous as time went on, I think. So Jardine, his first year was 5-6-1, and then his best team was in 1974 when they beat Nebraska. Artie Sanger played on that, was a flanker on that team and had a good game against Nebraska, but they beat Nebraska, and Nebraska was rated in the top, I think, 10 at the time.
Also, yeah, that was, I remember that one as being a kind of a pivotal one for the program. Also in that era was Rufus Ferguson, right?
Oh, yes.
The Roadrunner.
There wasn't a nicer man. I had a French class right before he had a Spanish class when we were in college, and I'd always see him, and he always had a smile on his face, upbeat, positive guy, and he was all Big Ten, I think, both his junior and senior year. But he was really a flamboyant, nice guy, and he got his nickname... the Roadrunner from baseball because he was such a good baseball player and fast on the lead. And he was about 5'6", 5'7".
Right, I was going to say, for folks who don't remember, he wasn't tall, certainly. He was the opposite of tall. But
yeah, and it's kind of funny because Tim Healy was an outstanding All-State quarterback at Madison East, mm-hmm. and Bobby Stork, who passed away tragically. Those guys and Ron Buss over there, they just had... They were the best team in the Big Eight when I was a senior, and all of them came to the UW. Tim Healy played against Minnesota quite a bit of the game and did an outstanding job. But his competition was Neil Graff, who was an All-Big Ten quarterback, I think, his junior year. But Tim Healy was, I think, the best quarterback that I ever saw operate. We played... Northwestern and Western Michigan as freshman, and he threw the ball as well as I've ever seen anybody throw a football.
What was it like just running into the stadium as a player, having been a fan as a kid?
It was
pretty cool.
Yeah, it was interesting because we went down. The first game of the year was against Oklahoma, and they had a good club, and we were down 14-7 with about 2 minutes to go in the game, and Neil Graff, the coach, said, "Hey, let's go for a first down," and we were on the 20-yard line. So they went in and scored, and so they beat us 21-7. But it probably should have, if we would have punted, it probably would have been 14-7. And Wisconsin hadn't done too well, you know, in this from 66-69.
Right.
So the fans were kind of excited to see what would happen. And then our second game, I believe, was against Texas. The Texas school was a Texas Tech. I should look that up quick. But anyway, it was a tie game, 10-10. And then our next game was against Penn State, and we beat them. And then we played Indiana, at Indiana, beat them handily, and then we beat Illinois at Illinois. So and we lost to Iowa. My daughters went to Indiana and Iowa, so I always pull for them now when they're not playing Wisconsin. But and we lost to Iowa. And there were some tough Middleton kids. Dave Sims was one of them that went to Iowa. And there was a Randall, who a good player from Middleton, that went to Iowa. And they beat us. And Coach Jardine was pretty upset about that game because they were down, way down in the league standings at the time. But and then we came back and had a good game against Ohio State. They were, I think, national champions in 69, so this is 70. And we're just down 10-7 at halftime. So I think the fans realized that a lot of the senior players were pretty darn good. You know, right. A lot of them went to the NFL. Bill Gregory, Larry Mialik, and a lot of them got drafted. And I've got a list of the people that got drafted from that team.
And this is also the era when Mike LaCrone arrives.
Yes.
And the band, you know, becomes a part of the festivities, you know, if you will. And,
yes.
You know, I think that era sort of set the groundwork for, if you will, the Camp Randall experience. Now, I think we were, USA Today said it's the best college football Saturday in the country now, you know, to be at Camp Randall Stadium.
And we had two other, Larry Mialik, of course, was all Big Ten, I think, his junior year as well. But we had Alan Thompson.
A-Train.
A-Train. And then we had some very good ends. And we had, obviously, Rufus. But we had Randy Marks was an outstanding flanker, and as I look back, I think that the defensive team, you know, with Chuck Winfrey, who was a middle linebacker, was one of the best middle linebackers.
Terrific,
and then Dave Lokenk followed him up, who was an outstanding All Big Ten player. But I look at Bill Gregory, who was a defensive tackle, and he played for the Dallas Cowboys and then the Seattle Seahawks later, but two wonderful players. And then, of course, a lot of them played in the pros. Larry Mialik had a career. He got drafted to the Falcons and had a nice career. So he's got a pension now because he played a little over 5 years in the NFL.
You mentioned, I think, in the book, Bob, if I'm remembering right, that you stayed friendly with Coach Jardine after he left. And he left under kind of not the best of circumstances, as I recall.
Yeah, his last year, he didn't have a good year. He was just such a classy man. He just said, "Hey, I'm going to take myself out." And I felt bad about that. But he stayed around town, and I got to see him, and he actually had a heart transplant. And he only made it about 10 months after that heart transplant. But I saw him right afterward, and I can tell you that he was the same old self. You know, he remembered me and just, "Bob, how you doing?" And a very charismatic man. And, you know, I think about him often because I was small for my position, he liked me because he said, "You're not afraid to hit, Bob, and I'm going to put you here or put you here." And I really respected that because I was only on a partial scholarship.
And didn't he have some sort of West Coast connection or somehow that he
yes.
thought that's why he wanted a fast guy?
And, yeah. Tommy Prothrow was a coach at UCLA, and he was he coached out there, a line coach. And Lou Stuick, who came in as the defensive coordinator, was the linebacker coach, so they coached together, and I think one of the things that Coach Jardine had is he was really good at recruiting talented assistant coaches, and I talk about all of them in there: Paul Roach, Stan Kemp, Lou Stuick, they all went on to other successful careers, and Jim Martin was outstanding athlete at Racine Park High School. I think he's still got the central gym record of the number of points scored. And Jim would probably remind me how many, because I always kid him about that. I think he had 30-some. And that's when, you know, if you had 20, that was a lot of points back when he played. I think he graduated in about 63. But he became a very well-respected district attorney and assistant district attorney and then a judge, a Dane County judge, circuit judge.
Bob, I want to make sure that folks know how they can find the book if they want to, The Importance of Mentors in Life, authored by Bob Schlicht. Is it Amazon? Is that the best place?
Well, you can get it at barnesandnoble.com.
Okay.
And then you can get it at amazon.com, either one of those.
Okay.
And then just Google the Robert A. Schlicht and then The Importance of Mentors in Life, and you'll be able to pick it up.
Well, I sure encourage folks to do that. As you can tell listening today, there's a lot of Madison history and sports history in the book, but there's also a lot on business and banking and Bob's very interesting life. So again, encourage you to pick up The Importance of Mentors in Life by Bob Schlicht. Bob, thanks very much.
Thank you.
I'm a little mixed up on the field fine. When I'm near the girl that I love best, my heart beats so it scares me to death when she touches my hand. Oh, what a chill I got. Her lips are like a volcano that's hot. I'm proud to say that she's my buttercup. I'm in love. I'm all shook up. Mm-hmm.